everybody.
Hello.
That was awesome. I was a little bit nervous before coming up here, but that was nice and soothing. No better way to get ready to do a talk than listen to that. I'm really excited to be here. I have a million things going on in my mind right now. There's a little bit of pressure coming at the end of a day like this, when I've heard so much amazing information. I had a plan to give a talk. I had my talk all planned out, and now I'm already thinking of things I would like to fix or change or add in. So hopefully I won't make this go too long, and I won't go down too many rabbit trails here. But my name's Adam Combs, and I'm the co-founder and co-director of Waypoint Adventure. When I was planning, or when Ben had asked me to do this talk, and we had kind of met and we're just talking quickly about what we wanted to cover, or what I should cover, Ben just mentioned, hey, it'd be cool for people to hear a little bit of the backstory of Waypoint and how Waypoint Adventure came to be. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to start by telling you a little bit of my story. I also have my business partner, partner in crime. Dan was supposed to be here today, so I was going to point him out, but unfortunately his son got sick, so he wasn't able to come. So I'm going to tell a little bit of the history of Waypoint to start. Then I'm going to give you the full picture of who Waypoint Adventure is, the mission we're trying to fulfill, and the impact that we believe it's making in the greater Boston area. And then finally, I'm going to end by trying to make a connection, what I believe is the connection between people with disabilities and the image of God, and how Waypoint is kind of helping that intersection be impactful for people with disabilities. So, without further ado, let me dive into the history. I have an undergraduate degree in outdoor education from a little small school down in Western North Carolina. If you haven't picked it up already, I'm not from around here originally. soon after or coming toward the end of my time in high school, I realized I can go to college and get a degree doing the things I love to do. Going hiking, going backpacking, going rock climbing, canoeing, all those types of things. I can tell you it's not a very lucrative career, but it's a lot of fun. Soon after finishing my bachelor's degree in outdoor education, I kind of went off and did a bunch of seasonal work. I was a guide, a rafting guide for a little while, was a rock climbing guide for a little while, led backpacking trips, worked at multiple camps, worked in an environmental education center for a little while. And so I did that for a couple years and finally decided, hey, you know what? I'm ready to settle down a little bit and get something a bit more permanent and stop living out of my truck. And so I ended up at a little outdoor education center down in Tennessee called Riversway Outdoor Adventure Center. And Riversway's niche, or Riversway's focus, is running adventure programs for people with disabilities. And that was the first time I really had the opportunity to work for that long period of time alongside and with people with disabilities. And I was hooked. I saw tons of impact those couple years that we were at Riversway. And I knew I wanted something. I wanted to further my career in this field of working with people with disabilities and outdoor and adventure education. The thing that I think really hooked me, or the I would say kind of the defining program or year that really hooked me in that, was I was part of a small team that helped develop a school-based program for Riversway to take into the public school system. And we called it Adventure Incentive, and basically it was a mix of team building and classroom lessons within the school, and then outdoor adventure programs provided as an incentive if students were meeting certain goals. So we were working specifically with kids that were at risk, not necessarily in the judicial system yet, but they were close. Lots of truancy, kids weren't showing up to school, poor grades, in school and out of school suspension, those types of things. And so we kind of developed this program to help provide some goals and some motivation for them to do better, while at the same time having a lot of time with them. We would have these multiple sessions a week with these small groups, and we got a chance to really build relationships with these kids. And we saw big impacts. Students were showing back up to school, at least in these groups. grades were going up. You know, kids were getting less in school and out of school suspension. It was awesome. I really saw a lot of impact. And so I kind of made the decision, hey, I want to go back to school. I want to get my teaching license, and I want my own class. I want to work in the school system, and I want to build relationships with a small group of kids that I can spend the whole year with and hopefully employ some of these same experiential and adventure models in the classroom. So I went to get my master's degree at Appalachian State University, and yes, it is pronounced Appalachian, not Appalachian. I went to get my master's degree at Appalachian State University. During my time there, especially toward the end of my time there, I realized, especially during my practicum work and doing research and spending a lot of time in the schools, I realized what I wanted to do wasn't really going to be possible, especially with the rise in state and federal mandates on the academics, the push toward better academics and higher academics. I was finding that the social and character development piece was kind of falling to the background at that time. It's now making a surge back forward. But I kind of put on the brakes. I was like, actually, this isn't what I want to do. I don't want to go into the school system. I don't want to be a full-time teacher. So I backed up and I did just a big search around the country to find out what other organizations around the country are running adventure programming, experiential education for people with disabilities. And I ran across a small organization in Medford, Massachusetts, believe it or not, called Outdoor Explorations. And it was at Outdoor Explorations that I met Dan. The story of getting there was I actually just picked up the phone and called the program director there, told her what I was interested in doing to find out if they had been running any programs with public school systems. And it turns out they had been running some indoor kayaking programs at a pool in East Boston with a Boston public school. And they were wanting to grow that program. They were wanting to grow that relationship. And so I said, listen, I want to start a program like this. I told her about the program we had at Riversway. She said, great, this all sounds awesome. We're not hiring. So I was like, okay, fine. Well, look, just keep me on your list. If something happens, let me know. Sure enough, 2 to 3 weeks later, she called back. She said, you're not going to believe this, but we had a program coordinator just put in their resignation. We'd love to interview you for the position. So I got a plane ticket and flew up to Medford. I was also curious, running adventure programs, working at multiple different camps, guiding, all that kind of stuff. When I looked at the map and I was like, Medford, how do you do this in Boston? What does this look like in a very urban environment? So I was curious to see where was Outdoor Explorations located? Did they have a big camp property, you know, in some ways, you know, smack in the middle of Boston? That wasn't the case. They were in the back of this little electric company. So I came up, interviewed for the position. Dan was on the team of people that interviewed me. I came back and I told my wife, Annie, I said, I met this guy, Dan, that I was really intrigued by. He asked great questions. It felt like we had a similar vision as to how we wanted to see a program like this develop. And it sounds like he'd be the guy I'd be working most closely with. Turns out they offered me the job. Annie and I moved up from North Carolina, from the beautiful high country of North Carolina, to Porter Square. We had a 8-year-old yellow lab that was very upset with us for doing that. And then Dan and I launched off in trying to develop this school-based program at Outdoor Explorations. A year into our work, we were finding a ton of synergy. We loved what we did. We were building great relationships with families and the school, and the program had really kind of had taken off. And then we got the word that Outdoor Explorations had lost funding and was closing down. And we were going to get laid off. And so we looked at each other and had what we affectionately call the dude, this can't end moment. And I love what I do. You love what you do. We like working together. Can we just keep this going? Of course, it was what I believe was the very bottom of the recession. And so all the advice of, you know, oh, we're going to go start a nonprofit, by the way. People were like, that's not a good idea, probably. You know? We decided to do it anyway. We surrounded ourselves with a lot of smart people, and we crunched a lot of numbers, and we put a business plan together. And we had the benefit of being the boots on the ground at Outdoor Explorations, so we knew all the contacts, and so we were able to call them up and say, hey, you've heard already Outdoor Explorations is closing, but we're coming hot on its heels with something else. We don't know what that's going to be yet, but we're going to come with something else. And so in 2010, Waypoint Adventure was incorporated as a 501c3 nonprofit in Boston, in Massachusetts. So here we are. There's lots of details in between that. None of that was even a long story there. But it's cool. And I was really appreciative, Ben, of your encouragement to go back and kind of tell that history, because it's been a while since I've put all that together in my mind, and it's really cool. I was very encouraged by just God's providence in bringing these two together, or bringing Dan and I together. The other thing I should mention before I get too far, Waypoint Adventure is not a Christian organization. Dan and I happen to be believers. And that was some of the synergy I think we were able to recognize right away in starting this thing. And so it's been really fun to work alongside him. Not everybody that works for us or with us are Christians either. We've had some very interesting conversations and moments, some of which I'll tell you about right now. So let me dive into Waypoint. Somebody's going to have to keep me on track on time too, by the way. And give me a 10-minute warning or something. Okay. Waypoint Adventure. This is us. Our mission is to challenge people with disabilities to discover their purpose, talents, and strengths through the transforming power of adventure. There's two things I want to point out in this mission statement, and these are two things that we hold very dear. Number one, we want to make sure that regardless of someone's disability level, barring any sort of real medical issue that a doctor says, no, they cannot go kayaking, we want them to be included in our programs. We want them to know that they belong on a Waypoint Adventure program. So that's number one. Number two, we believe that these adventure programs are powerful catalysts for change. We believe that these adventure programs, climbing mountains, paddling distances on rivers, spending time in creation, we believe that people begin to learn about who they are, full of purpose, talents, and strengths. And so, in addition to having fun, you're going to have fun if you come on a Waypoint Adventure program by default, our goal is to make sure that people leave having learned something. Something about themselves, some new adventure skill, right? Our focus is on education. So that's the two kind of pieces of this mission statement that I want to make sure stand out. Allow me a minute to just flip through all the different program types that we run, along with some pictures of them. And you may actually recognize some of these places. So we go outdoor kayaking. These are all Greater Boston sites, by the way. We have a base camp. We have an office space at Cotting School in Lexington, which is a school for kids with disabilities. We just are housed there. Everything we do is off-site. This is on the Charles River in Newton. This is on the Charles River in Newton, too, actually. This is down by the boathouse at the Cloverleaf, 95 and 90. This is Auburndale Park, if any of you guys have been over there. Indoor kayaking programs. This is New England, and we like to kayak. So we're going to take them inside. extends the season. It's also a great way to get people who might just be nervous about going kayaking into a really controlled environment. If anybody has any real specific physical needs or accommodations or supports that they need, we can do that right there in the shallow end. Make sure the boat's going to be nice and steady. So indoor kayaking programs are a lot of fun. We go on hiking programs. Tons of places to hike around here. You guys, many of you know. This is in the Middlesex Fells. This is in the Middlesex Fells too. Actually, we go in the Blue Hills too. Can't tell what that map is. I think that's Middlesex Fells. Anyway, and then we also hike, out in Metro West as well. A lot of it depends. A lot of where we go depends on the group and where the group's coming from. We love to show people what's in their backyard. And that's one of the beautiful things about Boston that I've found, even though it's a very urban area, Boston and Massachusetts has done a great job preserving land and preserving green space. And so there's tons of places to take folks. Backpacking programs, obviously we don't do those right around the city. This is all up in New Hampshire. We also do some backpacking programs out in Western Mass and up in Maine too. Snowshoeing programs. This is actually the Assabet River Wildlife Refuge out in Sudbury. If any of you have never been out there, you should go. Beautiful, beautiful chunk of land. Really feels like you're in a pretty remote area. Outdoor rock climbing programs. This is Quincy Quarries down in Quincy, and this is Hammond Pond in Newton. We use a variety of other places around, too. This one does not have the remote feel, by the way. behind the Macy's. Indoor rock climbing programs. You can see a lot of the different adaptive equipment to allow folks with fairly severe physical disabilities to participate. Use a lot of different gyms around the area. Our home gym is, and the one we try to use most, is Central Rock Climbing Gym in Watertown. Cool. Very, very cool gym. Great location. Ropes course programs and team building. Many of you can probably resonate with some of these pictures. I'm sure a lot of you have done ropes courses before. But just great ways to kind of bring teams together, allow people to challenge themselves, allow teams to kind of practice what it means to work as a team, that kind of thing. So we do a lot of that, both as standalone programs and in individual programs. I'm going to show you a quick one-minute video that's going to give you a glimpse into the look and feel of these programs. And I hope the speaker's going to work.
Waypoint Adventure provides people with disabilities access to life-transforming adventure programs, helping them become stronger individuals and better community members.
Okay, come right over here and circle up over here, okay?
I have in my hands our schedule. We're going to get to spend some time in nature, and we're going to spend some time getting to know our community. What was our goal?
What?
Not only is it good for me, I can help other people too.
What was that one word?
Challenge!
Was climbing up the rocks hard?
Yeah, challenge. I challenged myself.
This helps me become more comfortable with the rest of the world.
Did everybody have fun today?
To learn more or volunteer, visit waypointadventure.org.
Looks like a lot of fun, doesn't it? You can go to our website. There's a volunteer tab at the top of the website. We take volunteers. No, for real. You should come volunteer in the program. I'm going to skip that. So just to move a little bit quicker, I'm going to skip that little section there and let you know that we believe people don't truly learn unless they challenge themselves. Until we step, this is a very simple graphic, by the way, but... As you step out of the comfort zone into that challenge zone, we believe this is where learning really happens. Now, in all seriousness, in order to connect challenge with support, so we also believe, and I think this you all would probably be able to resonate with this, that in order for people to truly challenge themselves, to truly step out of their comfort zone, we have to feel like we're supported. We have to feel like there's some sort of safety net or something that I can back up into and I know it's going to be there to catch me. It makes me more apt to be able to step out of that comfort zone and into my challenge zone. So Waypoint connects three things. We believe this is kind of our secret recipe for creating a supportive environment. And we weave these three things into all of our programs very intentionally. Community, number one. I'm going to go back to this later. Community, experienced staff and trained volunteers create a sense of community. Access, obviously, adaptive equipment, custom curriculum. We spend a lot of time in conversation with the program directors, the teachers, the parents, the families, talking a bit more about how do people communicate best, how can we bring the things that they're already used to using onto our programs to make sure that access is truly created. And then preparation. I feel like this is a really important one, too, I think is fairly unique. And this is really about helping people prepare both mentally and emotionally. We find that folks who don't often have these opportunities like this, didn't grow up challenging themselves in this way, going on these adventures, this is a big leap that a lot of us are like, what's the big deal? It's a big deal. And so helping people understand, hey, we're not going to push you today. You can go as far as you want to go. If you tell me, hey, I don't want to climb anymore, I'm done. Okay, you're done. Maybe a little bit more. Right? So we'll try to challenge them, we'll try to push them, but we want people to know, hey, you're safe here. And if you decide not to do this at all, that's okay. We're just glad you're here. We're glad you're part of the community. All right? Now, That's Waypoint. We believe when these things are in place, people are able to challenge themselves within this supportive community, and learning happens. Even if it's that you learned you never want to go kayaking again, you learned something. I'm going to show you a video in a little bit that's going to show you a story of impact. I could tell you hundreds of stories of impact that have fueled us through the development of this thing. And so I'll get to that in a minute. I'm going to switch gears now, and I'm going to move into the kind of the third phase of my talk. And this is that I want to take a minute to talk through kind of really one of the deeper reasons that kind of in more intimate conversations between Dan and I as to why we started this thing. And I want to do that by telling you my perspective on disability. I should start by saying it's not my perspective. I subscribe to what Stephanie Hubach, in her book Same Lake, Different Boat, calls the biblical perspective on disability. In this book, she outlines three perspectives on disability. And I'm going to rattle through the first two fairly quickly, and then we're going to camp out on number three. Number one, the historical view on disability. The historical view on disability, Stephanie says, is that disability is an abnormal part of a normal world. In this view, folks who used to or may even still subscribe to this view said that disability is something that needs to be fixed or separated from society. Think about history. Think about events like the Holocaust and the way people with disabilities were treated. Think about the whole institutionalization movement and the fact that there was a period of time when babies would be born with disabilities and immediately shipped off to hide and be medicated for the rest of their lives with no training program, and even in some instances killed right here in America. That's the historical view. We could do a lecture on that. Number two, the postmodern view. You can read this quickly and realize the postmodern view, especially in its extreme usage or extreme stance, is a reaction to the historical view and all the horrible things that happened in that view. And the postmodern view says that disability is a normal part of a normal world. It's a gift, and in no way negative. Now, that's the extreme view. There are lots of parts of this, if you talk with folks who may subscribe to this, and there are a lot of them, especially now, and there are lots of this that I totally agree with. However, when you put it up against this next view, I think it'll resonate as to why maybe I don't agree with this entirely. And Stephanie, if you get any book on disability in the gospel, there's actually two I would recommend. One is Same Lake, Different Boat by Stephanie Hubach. And then the second one is Disability in the Gospel by Michael Beetz. Both do a great job and a much better job talking through all this than I do. But she has some really funny stories kind of in perspective to this postmodern view. The third is what Stephanie calls the biblical view on disability. And this view says disability is a normal part of life in an abnormal world. Y'all, I believe that people with disabilities, like those without, like all of us, are created in the image of God. You know what that means now. We've talked about it all day. Humans were the crowning act of creation. We've read this verse a million times. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over it, or rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground." There are a few other verses I would like to insert here as well that we've talked through a lot. And then the fall happened. Allow me please to read a little bit more of Stephanie's book because she says it so well. She says, "Disability is indeed a normal part of life as we know it. It's unpredictable, but occurs with a degree of regularity. You'll find people with disabilities across cultures of every kind around the world, but does that make it something to celebrate? The key to understanding this is the context, and the context is four missing words: in an abnormal world." She then goes on to quote someone many of you know very well, Mr. Francis Schaeffer from his book, The God Who Is There. And in that, Francis says, it is not that philosophy and Christianity deal with completely different questions, but they differ in their answers. including the important point as to whether man and history are now normal or abnormal. I'm just going to let Stephanie write the rest of my talk. But does this mean that everything in the human experience is ruined by the fall? No. But it does mean that everything in the human experience is affected by the fall. On every level of every dimension of the human experience, we are affected by the blessedness of creation and the brokenness of the fall. I love that line. I don't know how to work PowerPoint that well, but if I did, I would highlight that. Because it just clearly paints this picture of the tension that we see in everything. You watch the news for 10 minutes, and you'll see this. Affected by the blessedness of creation and the brokenness of the fall. Let me show you another video. In this video, you're going to see how Waypoint partners with schools and social service agencies and designs programs around specific goals. This is a video about a partnership that we've had with the Boston Public School in East Boston that was actually born out of our work at Outdoor Explorations, which is a whole other really cool story of how God put all that together. You're also going to hear a little bit of an anecdotal story of impact about a friend of ours named Rachel. We've known Rachel for 5 years. We've worked with Rachel for 5 years. She's an amazing young lady. And so you're going to get a chance to hear a little bit of the impact that Waypoint's had on Rachel.
Waypoint is an organization that comes into our school and works with students in our special ed strand. They have two components to their program. They do a physical activity part of their program, and then they also have an educational component. And I just think it really helps them build that collaborative team spirit that pushes the work in the classroom forward. When I met with Waypoint as a teacher and we talked about this year and what I would like to see for these students was building their confidence and kind of encouraging them to take risks, because a lot of them become comfortable in this nice little classroom, and we wanted to work on them really pushing themselves out of their comfort zones. When they're doing the kayaking program, they've encouraged them to do a wet exit out of the kayak, which involves the students going underwater for a period of time, and they have to trust that Dan or Adam or another student is going to be there to help them if they struggle, which I think trust for these kids is difficult. Rachel is a student in my class who's very positive. I think as a result of Waypoint, she's really expanded herself into helping other students achieve their goals.
I made a decision to go home by JF. It made Isaiah feel safe when I was there.
Through her involvement in Waypoint has really blossomed.
Waypoint helps me challenge myself.
There's no limits to what she can do.
Yeah! Go Rachel. Hopefully it's clear. At Waypoint, we aim to use adventure within a supportive community environment to challenge people with disabilities to begin to discover their talents, gifts, and strengths. What I would say are their God-given talents, gifts, and strengths. As you heard in this video, the teacher at the end, she said there's no limits to what she can do. Is there limits to what she can do?
Yes.
Yes. We live in an abnormal world. There's limits to what she can do. There's limits to what all of us can do. But I think the teacher was overemphasizing to make a point, and at that point I want to shout, yes! Even though Rachel has significant challenges and significant things that she's up against, she has inherent value and worth. We've talked about that all weekend. She has abilities that build on top of that inherent value and worth. And if we can in some way show her express to her that she belongs, that she's important because she's created in the image of God, then she's free to shine with all of her ability. So last night after Ben's talk, and this is again the thing with, I guess, going at the end of all these things is you're trying to process all this and how it's going to fit in. I went home and I was up for a little while longer thinking through some of Ben's comments. And so I didn't add any more slides because I didn't want to have to take time to do that, but I added some more thoughts. So Ben talked about the Imago Dei, the image of God, kind of in two capacities, or in two elements. Human capacities, looking at the image of God through human capacities, and looking at the image of God through our fundamental identity. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah.
Is that, okay. And as I was listening to this, I was thinking, you know, this isn't... It's easy to kind of take this as a versus situation, like human capacities versus our fundamental identity. Which one's more representative of the image of God? And I was probably thinking about it more than I was listening to you, because you probably laid this out very eloquently. You know, our capacities or our abilities, I believe, are a unique expression of the image of God. And I think Ben may have said that. They're a unique expression of the image of God in us. Our unique human capacities grow, I believe, out of our fundamental identity. I was doing some more searching on the internet last night, just reading a bit more. And I came across this article by a guy, Art Lindsley, who is part of the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. And he says this. He says, being made in the image of God provides the basis for our work and vocation. If we are made in the image of God, we share his characteristics. For example, because God is creative, and Danny did a great job talking about this. Thank you, Danny. Because God is creative, we can be creative in our work, and in fact, are called to such creativity. Also, knowing the basis for our dignity and worth helps us believe that we have gifts and talents to employ. Look at Rachel. I mean, just the sheer confidence that she was able to gain, and the realization that I belong here, I can challenge myself in this way. She was able to show that this empathy that she had and this desire to go help her friends learn too, right? Art goes on, he says, I know many people who haven't discovered their calling because they don't believe they have anything to offer. They don't believe they have dignity and worth, and they fail to recognize their God-given gifts as a result. Now, with that said, Ben said this, and this resonated really well. Abilities are not a qualification or criteria for displaying the image of God. Our abilities are not a qualification, they're not a criteria for displaying the image of God. The image of God is, again, at its root level, displayed simply in our personhood, in being created beings by God. The quote, I forget the lady's name, but it goes all the way down, right? Even if Rachel didn't have clear abilities, physical abilities in the form of obvious contributions, you have to know that I still believe she has value and worth, and that she has the right to participate in programs like this and challenge herself in the same way as her non-disabled peers. She has value just in her personhood, just in being the created being that she is. This is my friend Ryan. We do a number of different... We actually do four adaptive rock climbing programs a year in partnership with Spalding Rehab Hospital. We do one up on the North Shore, one in Boston, one down on the Cape, and then we do an outdoor program at Quincy Quarries. And these are open to the public. People can sign up through Spalding Rehab. This year, we actually ended up doing the North Shore one at Gordon College in the Bennett Center. So this is a picture of the Bennett Center. If you've been up there, you know there's kind of a glass wall. You can see a bunch of people out there watching. So Ryan came climbing with us. Ryan is nonverbal. He has pretty extreme limited physical mobility. His communication, as far as I gather, we didn't spend a ton of time with Ryan, but in talking with his family a little bit and in communicating with him a little bit, he can answer yes or no questions by smiling or raising his arms. That's about all you get from Ryan. Really cool kid. After transferring him, tying him in, attaching his hands to the rope, so he's in this, it's called a 3-to-1 mechanical advantage system, and basically we hook a little handlebar ascender, which I don't know if you'll see in this next picture, but we hook a little ascender where to the rope where he can actually do pull-ups and pull himself up, and he's actually only pulling a third of his body weight. We also have a way to be able to even pull his arms up if he doesn't have the ability to extend. So we can pull his arms up, and then as much as he can pull down, and we can pull down with him, right? And so he's kind of slow. It's a real slow process, but he's climbing. He's ascending the rope. There's a guy who developed this system by the name of Mark Wellman, paraplegic, He's climbed El Capitan, which is largest single face wall in the U.S. It took him 10 days, something like, you know, over 3,500 pull-ups or something. He climbed El Cap doing pull-ups. The point I'm trying to make here is I did a lot of work to get Ryan hooked up and to help him ascend. I changed my shirt after this picture, actually. I was pouring sweat. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of effort. I wouldn't say that Ryan had a ton of capacity to contribute in the way that many of us think of that word. Does that mean that Ryan doesn't have value or worth or shouldn't have been on this program? No. I can tell you it would have been a completely different program if Ryan wasn't there. It would have been a completely different day if Ryan wasn't there. Just by him being there, just by his presence in the room, he made a huge contribution. The way we related with each other, the way the community rallied around him and related with one another, just because Ryan was there, made a big difference. He actually had just come from... before I tell that part of the story, maybe let me read this. I also came across another great quote. Those of you who know Jack Miller. I love Jack Miller. And I'd had this buried in my phone, and that's what I was looking at when you texted me and called me out for looking at my phone last night, Joshua. But I found this quote by Jack Miller. It says, "We often think we have to be able to do what someone else can do, or that we have to do something very visible. We are creatures made in the image of God, and what He has given us is enough. Isn't it wonderful to be sane and not pretend that you are more or less than you are?" I don't behave that way, by the way. But it's a cool thought. Ryan made it to the top. Good job, Ryan. He had been at a Special Olympics basketball program before this, and like his team and all their families came down. You can see in that last picture. The hallway, by the time he got up, was filled with people, and it just erupted when he got up. Yeah! It was awesome. So Ryan made it to the top. I'm getting toward the end here. Take a look at these statistics. And think about them, or I want to encourage you to think about them in reference to being created in the image of God and the fall, or the blessedness of creation and the brokenness of the fall. At Waypoint, we preach this. We believe that people with disabilities can. We believe that they can find success at school in some way. We believe that they do have talents to contribute to the workforce. We believe that they do add value and should be involved in our communities. We believe that they should be experiencing the benefits of physical activity right alongside their able-bodied peers. I want to make a final point. I'm going to try to do this in 4 minutes to keep us on time, Mary Frances, wherever you are. Remember this model graphic we talked about? In order for people to really challenge themselves, they have to feel supported. These are the three things we put together to help create an environment of support. I want to focus on number one to make this final point. I'm going to give you some homework after this. In making this point, I want to make this point, I want to give you some homework. When we talk about number one, I personally, when I think about Waypoint in our programs, I hold this the highest, most important thing we do. When we talk about community at Waypoint, we're really talking about belonging. We say that people perform to their potential when they feel like they belong and are respected. I think this will resonate with you as I go on here. Norman Kuntz is a disability advocate. He's a guy with cerebral palsy. He's really funny. If you ever get a chance to just look him up, here's how you spell his name. He's got some YouTube videos and some great articles. He wrote an article that I would encourage all of you to go read. It's called "The Need to Belong: Rediscovering Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs." And in this article, Norman says Maslow has it right. If you know anything about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know you have to have the the one preceding before you can move on toward self-actualization, right? We have to have our physiological needs met before we can move on to finding safety, and so on. He says Maslow had it right, especially when it comes to these two right here. Kuntz says this: belonging is a prerequisite for the development of self-esteem and self-confidence. This is why Maslow puts self-esteem above belonging in his hierarchy. Without a social context in which to validate a person's perceived worth, self-worth is not internalized. I'm not claiming this as gospel truth, but I know for myself, many of my own gifts, talents, strengths, I see them when I'm with people, when I'm rooted in community, when I'm interacting in community, when I'm outside of the vacuum, right? When I'm not put aside or put somewhere else. Maslow says that a person must feel like they belong before they are able to achieve mastery, or before they are able even to grow in their self-esteem. They've got to feel like they belong, especially until they are able to achieve mastery. Now, we agree with this. I agree with this. Maybe I shouldn't say we. I think I'm pretty sure we do. Dan and I have talked about this a lot. But we as a society have it flipped. Not all the time. This is not a blanket statement. But I believe in a lot of senses we as a society have it flipped. We force people to achieve something or prove their worth through some ability or talent or their work before we make them belong, before they can come in. Kuntz really tells this really funny story about meeting this guy, and it just made this realization for him. He said, you know, when you meet somebody new, whether it happens right away or not, eventually you get to the question of, well, what do you do for work? And he said, I'm not saying this happens with everybody. I'm not saying everybody's malicious about it. But subconsciously, in some senses, they're putting you in a place, right? They're putting you in a hierarchy. He also gives this really cool example of two scenarios. And I want you to play along with me here for a second. But he says, scenario number one, you're going to this conference. You know, you're supposed to be in this particular hotel room. There's a conference going on. It's not a large amount of people. There's a good chance you're going to meet everybody at some point, but you don't know anybody in there. Scenario number one, you walk in. There's a group of people in the back corner. They're all talking and laughing and telling funny stories. And there's obviously some sort of something going on that you're supposed to be a part of in some way. So you walk in the room. Somebody from the group turns around and sees you, and then they turn right back around and continue talking. What's your reaction? I walk over. Hey, I think I'm supposed to be in here. What are you guys talking about? You know, walls are up. You're trying to prove yourself. You're trying to slide your way in. You're trying to tell a funny joke so that they'll accept you, right? Does that resonate? Okay. Scenario number two. This is a very simple analogy. Scenario number two, same situation. You walk in. Person turns around. Oh, Dick. Come on in. Come here. Let me introduce you to my friends. Hey, let me catch you up to speed. This is what we were talking about, by the way. Isn't that funny? Walls are down. You're able to just be who you are. You can come in and hang out and get to know people on a normal kind of level playing field, right? Here's the point I'm trying to make. When we don't see value in people because they are people, because they are simply created in the image of God and they should be valuable. They are valuable. When we don't take time to get to know people for people, when we don't work hard to include them and provide access for them in our communities, when we don't work hard to seek them out, those on the margins, and bring them in, when we don't actively let them know that they do belong here, we immediately affect their self-esteem. And Kuntz would say, thus their ability to perform to their maximum potential. Even if performing means just being a part, just being there with us. We at Waypoint, and I believe you as a society, should be working hard to find those people on the margins, whether they're people with disabilities or not. And we should be making them belong, bringing them in, despite the impact of the abnormal world, whatever that means for them or for you. So my homework for you is for you to think about people in your communities, people that you know, your neighbors, that maybe not even are necessarily on the margins, but maybe they're just people that you just don't really get along with and you don't agree with and you argue every time you're together. We were talking about this at lunch, but I feel like there is, in some senses, a lot of some of the issues going on today are rooted in this idea that we're living these isolated lives, separate from one another. And we're not, and Dick mentioned this earlier, we're not sitting across the table from each other. We're not belonging to each other. So that's my homework for you. And I'm going to leave you with this.
I don't think you finished it. Because think of people in your neighborhood. I know where you're going.
And bring them in. Go have dinner with them. Does that finish it?
Yeah. I was like, wait, what's this? Because I was busy taking notes and now I was like,
reach out to them. That's your homework. Make them feel like they belong so that they can display their God imaging capabilities so that you can get to know them, so that communities can be built, all that stuff. I'll leave you with this, a quote by one of my other favorite guys on this topic, Jean Vanier. I know Joshua and I have had quite a few conversations about this guy, but I think this kind of sums it up too.
Read it.
The beauty of human beings lies in their capacity to accept who they are, just as they are. Not to live in a world of dreams and illusions, in anger or despair, wanting to be other than they are or trying to run away from reality. They realize they have the right to be themselves, and there they discover that they are loved by God, and that they are unique and important for God, and that they can do things for others. Thank you.